Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Good Saturday afternoon. And I'm glad you're with me. You know, we are going to be taking a look at a number of items today, some of which is going to challenge us to really think through life. Think through some of the decisions that are made that impact our lives. And I'm hoping that we'll get to the point where we really begin to take honest looks at who's making decisions that are causing us problems, who's making decisions that are helping us. Honest looks. Too often we're not really honest about where the problems are deriving from, where the help is deriving from. We have our affiliations and our loyalties, and unfortunately, our greatest affiliations, our greatest loyalties are for too many people not at all tied in to truth. I definitely want us to continue working at becoming people of integrity so that instead of just automatically placing blame here and denying facts, denying reality so we can keep placing blame where it really does not belong. And when we need to see shortcomings, we refuse to see them. We instead choose to shut our eyes to the shortcomings. If it shows up the one or the ones we have decided to be loyal to, close our eyes so that we don't have to admit the truth, that the ones that we are loyal to are messing up. Let's be honest so that we can start making wiser decisions based on truth, based on reality, so that we can get down to the business of supporting positions by supporting people who really take the nation where it needs to go. Before we look at the nation, though, let me tell you this too. We're also going to spend some time this Saturday grabbing hold of some business inspiration. I mean some business inspiration too. We're going to take a look at three different people, three different business people, all of them successful. And one will be Asian. Another will be African, someone from Morocco, born in Morocco, raised in Nigeria. Another would be from right here in America. One will be female, the other two male. But we have a pretty good mix, and it's going to be all about business inspiration. That's what's going to be coming up shortly. But before we go there, let me take you back to some news coverage that we looked into a while back, and it had to do with meanness. And I'm going to give you an update. You may have heard about it and or read about it by now, but we discussed it here on this program as well. So I definitely want to give you an update. And unfortunately, it is not the kind of update that we really should be hearing about. It has to do with, courtesy of BBC, this update comes. And it has to do with that gang rape, one of the gang rapes that took place in India a few years ago. Police have yet to make any arrests as of a few days ago, although the 21-year-old was attacked at least a week ago in Rohtak town in the northern state of Haryana. She had been pursuing a case in court against the five men who raped her several years ago when she was attacked last Wednesday. I'm sorry, and I'm saying last Wednesday. Not Wednesday, July 20th, but Wednesday, July 13th. She had been attacked. And again, now, this really is outrageous. The woman said that she was forced inside a car and the men tried to strangle her. She was seriously injured and left for dead in the bushes. Someone passing by saw her and took her to the hospital. Now, check this out. The woman was first assaulted in 2013 in Bhiwanitown. Her family has alleged that they had moved to Ratak after they were threatened by the ones who had been accused, who had been out on bail. She was assaulted. She was raped in 2013 by five people. Five men gang raped her in 2013. She was pursuing legal action, and they were threatened by the five men who were out on bail, and so they moved to Ratak. The lady said that she was leaving the college when she saw them. She said they were the same five men. They forced her inside the car, tried to strangulate me, and she said that they said that they would kill her father and brother. She said she has no idea where they took her, but she said that her attackers were the same five men. Nearly 4 years after the brutal gang rape and murder of a 23-year-old physiotherapy student on a bus in Delhi caused global outrage and brought India quite a bit of infamy, it appears that the authorities have yet to treat this issue seriously. The gang rape of the student in Ratak, allegedly by the same men who raped her 3 years ago, is an example of how callously the authorities treat victims of rape. Questions are being asked about how the five men who were accused of a serious crime like rape were free to conduct another attack. There's also the question of why the victim and her family were not provided with any security when they said they had been threatened. Many are wondering if this barbaric attack will finally jolt the Indian government into action in a country where, according to official statistics, a rape is recorded every 15 minutes. A rape is recorded every 15 minutes. How many rapes are committed every 15 minutes that are not recorded? This young lady's family has alleged that the attackers had been putting pressure on them to settle the case, and they were punishing the woman for pursuing the case in court. A local police official, Garima, who uses only one name, told reporters that they had registered a complaint and a team had been sent to Bhiwani to look for the accused men. But in the meantime, angry protests had been held in Ratak demanding immediate arrest of the accused men. Rape and gender crimes have been in the spotlight in India in recent years after the brutal gang rape and murder of a student in 2012 in Delhi. And in response, new anti-rape laws were introduced in the country, but brutal sexual attacks against women and children continue to be reported across the country. What is it going to take to get something to be done to help make women and children in India safer, to help them feel more comfortable about being outside of their homes, in college, walking on the street, riding in buses? All right. Business inspiration. And BBC is bringing us three success stories. And I'm telling you, these are truly some inspirational stories. We're going to be talking about, especially in two of the cases, situations where bleakness was the order of the day. And I do mean the order of the day, for a while anyhow. And then you talk about a turnaround. If Chatri Sityadong didn't party that much at Harvard University, there was partly a good reason. He was sharing his dormitory room with his mother. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me right. He was attending Harvard University, and he did have a roommate in his dorm. In his dorm room, it wasn't a fellow student. It was his mother. Chatri had been born and raised in Thailand to a wealthy family. And I know you're thinking, okay, wait a minute, now, hold up. Something ain't quite jiving. I'm having trouble connecting the dots here. He was born to a wealthy family, and yet his mother shared his dorm room when he was in college. Stay with me. He was studying at Harvard in the late 1990s when the Asian financial crisis hit. So back in Bangkok, due to that sharp economic downturn, his father's property company collapsed and the family lost everything. Their home was repossessed and their bank accounts were seized. Then, according to Chatri, his father ran away and abandoned the family, leaving his mother homeless and alone. She scraped together enough money to fly to Boston, where Chatri had to smuggle her into Harvard. He had a single dorm room, and you needed to use an electric card pass to get into the building. So Chatri says that he would coordinate with his mother to meet her at the entrance. She had nowhere else to go. Surviving on $4 a day when he was at his lowest point while at Harvard, Chatri said that his younger self had vowed to restore his family's fortunes using the mental strength that he had gained from his lifelong dedication to martial arts. He said they were really left in completely bleak circumstances. Aren't you already beginning to admire this man? He's roughly 45 now, but 45 now, go back to college age, probably a teenager, late teens, into early 20s. When his mother arrived in Boston, he moved her into his dorm room rather than stop going to school. He continued to work towards his college degree with all that was against them for having gone from riches virtually to rags. And he would not give up. He had decided when he left Asia, Thailand, to go to Boston, that he was going to get a degree from Harvard. And he held on to that dream even after the family lost everything. And again, at his lowest point while at Harvard, he was surviving on $4 a day. So that would leave him with roughly, what, $120 per month? As you know, that is not a lot of money, even in the 1990s. $120 per month. So he was determined he was going to restore what had been lost. Martial arts training helped give him the courage, the work ethic, and the desire to fight for his dreams. That is what enabled him, he says, to bring his family out of poverty. Within a decade, Chatri was a multimillionaire who ran his own investment fund on Wall Street. And today, he's the founder and CEO of One Championship. That's the name of the company, One Championship. It's a televised East Asia-wide mixed martial arts competition that is broadcast in more than 1 billion homes. Let's back up for a minute. In order to be able to afford to stay at Harvard, remember, at his lowest point, he was surviving on $4 a day. And I know some of you are asking, how was he able to remain at Harvard? Well, at the time, he was earning his master's degree in business administration, and he took out bank loans, and he started to teach Muay Thai, the Thai martial art that resembles kickboxing. He had spent his teenage years training in the discipline and even competed professionally a few times. So you know this must be something that, number one, he enjoyed, and number two, he was dedicated to. Juggling his studies at Harvard with teaching Muay Thai, Chatri also found the time to launch a startup company with a fellow student, working on a master's degree in business administration, taking care of his mother, teaching martial arts. He was also starting up a company. The business was a software startup called Next Door Solutions. Continuing to run the firm after graduation, Chatri and his business partner moved to California and secured $38 million of investment. A few years later, they sold the business for an undisclosed fee. While Chatri says that he didn't pocket enough to retire on, it was his first taste of escaping poverty. Ladies and gentlemen, come on, don't you have some level of admiration for this man already? He worked for two large investment funds. By the way, it was after he sold his company, Next Door Solutions, that he decided on a complete change. Remember, he had an MBA from Harvard, so he moved to New York to pursue a career on Wall Street. He worked for two large investment funds, and Chatri was so impressed that in 2005, he got backing to launch his own investment firm. His business is Zara Capital Management, looked after $500 million worth of investments. But age 37, and by then a multimillionaire, he says he realized he wanted another change. A multimillionaire at age 37, overseeing his own investment firm, Azara Capital Management. He said he wanted to do something else. He just wasn't fulfilled. He said that when he was dirt poor, he always felt that when he made millions, he'd be happy and all of his problems would be solved. But he said something was still missing. Even though he had become a multimillionaire, something was missing and he did not feel fulfilled. He did not feel like he was doing what he really wanted to be doing. So in 2008, he decided to quit banking and go back to his first love of martial arts. He was living in Singapore at the time, where he had located himself to launch an Asian branch of his investment fund. Wanting to set up some sort of martial arts business, his brainwave was the fact that there was not a Pan-Asian martial arts competition. And remember, this is a man who had loved the martial arts, not just watching it, but participating in it as a youngster and for years and years, dedicated to the sport that he loved so much. And then he decided it was time to take it to another level. Instead of just participating now, he was going to make it a business. I'll tell you more when we come back.